Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 432 of the Roguecast, recorded September 19th, 2023. The Chief Chirpa Interruption.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Roguecast. That's all the intro I got this week.
How bland.
I'm sorry.
But you know what's not bland? We're going to talk about it later, as we all got to watching the One Piece live action on Netflix this week.
We are going to talk about the One Piece.
Or last week or two. It is quite rare to find this particular trio of people talking about anything manga or anime related.
It's true.
We're not against it. It's just not our thing. We weren't born with
Unless
it.
Unless it's Cowboy Bebop.
I'm against it.
You watched the Cowboy Bebop anime too?
I did.
And you buy all the Junji Ito manga.
I am.
All right, I just want to call out the hypocrisy.
No, I'm against it.
I don't remember the last manga I bought.
It's probably been a little while for me, but you know what? Take that back. About 2 weeks ago, I bought that manga that whose name is going to escape me because it's one of those weird names, that a customer, I just heard them talking about, that's like an end-of-the-world thing. It was from the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
But it's kind of like a cozy end-of-the-world, for lack of a better term, a little seaside community where they're whiling away the end times in a peaceful sort of way, as told from the perspective of a woman who's like an android and is kind of a beloved in the community, I think, but otherwise looks like a person, I think.
Yeah.
She has green hair because anime, manga,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, sure.
And yeah, it seems like it is not one of these that's meant to be like, oh, like, let's meditate upon the death, or let's, you know, there's wasteland reavers coming or anything like that. It's more like, you know, oh, I'm going to go and connect with this shopkeep on my way to get some supplies further inland.
It's the anti-Cormac McCarthy, is what you're saying?
It does seem to be. It does seem to be. I haven't read enough of it to, like, tell you a lot about it, but it was super interesting. I was like, there is nothing that I can compare this to.
Huh.
So yeah, and if I had said knew the name of it, I would say it. I'll see if I can come up with it.
All right, but yeah, we also it's a pretty big week of comics.
Yeah, it was.
We got some trailers to talk about, but yes, we're all very excited to talk about One Piece at the end of the episode.
Yep.
We got some new games in. Not a lot this week, but we did get some notable ones. The board game clearance sale is still going. Mm-hmm. We still have 50% off on a fair number of board games.
People have been having a good time with that.
Yep.
We also did, by the way, we finished clearing out the last of our the water damage stuff we have, so yep. Thanks, hopefully people are enjoying the, you know, the cool terrain and some other board games that you got, which really generally just had some, like, lightly weakened exteriors, but otherwise everything was awesome inside.
We got the new Disney Dixit.
Yep.
Which, right. For those who don't know, Dixit is a game where you have, like, art cards, and you have to sort of, like, get some people to guess what you're going for, but not everybody to guess what you're going for. And so you can do, like, little one-word clues, and it's a really neat thing, and this uses, like, Disney imagery, so it's got a whole bunch of original new artwork set up.
I was going to say, I've seen some of the artwork for the cards, and it's gorgeous.
And it's got that turning red, like the new turning red.
Oh, wow.
It also goes back to, like, Snow White, so it's, like, a whole bunch of different stuff. If you buy it early on, you get bonus meeples. You get a Stitch meeple.
You get a Stitch meeple.
What?
And a pack
of cards.
Yeah, I believe it's a pack of cards.
Yep. So yeah, pretty cool.
Stitch Meeple and a pack of smokes.
And a pack of smokes.
Classic Disney prize.
That's in the R-rated version of Lilo and Stitch. He's always smoking.
We got Descent Betrayer's War, which is the new of their revamped Descent. Mm-hmm. This is their new base set. Looks pretty cool. And just today we got D&D Phandelver and Below Shattered Obelisk, which is the new adventure set in the Forgotten Realms. This is based on the adventure that was in the original, the box set from 5e.
Yep.
Which I think it incorporates that and then adds on, so it like goes up to 12th, 12th level. I know there's goblins. I know there's a mind flayer.
I saw that there's a section on Dwergar magic. I don't know what else is going on, but it's. I can say that, you know, I learned 5th edition through the box set, the starter set that had the Mines of Phandelver in it, and I thought it was a really well done adventure that was great for kind of getting you into the game and letting you try a bunch of different stuff. Mm-hmm. And it had, you know, some good little lore percolating in the background, so I think this is a good follow up. I thought that was a great starter set. As always, we've got the regular cover and the very cool variant.
And I will say that the alt cover for this one is probably my favorite alt cover they've done in quite some time.
Do you like it?
Pretty cool.
It is gorgeous.
This is the very kind of almost like a metallic green, but it's like sort of Lovecraftian, mm-hmm. and because they do the raised, what do you call that? It's
embossed.
I think that's right. Like an embossed thing that's kind of a cool, particularly cool effect. It's like got a light but cool texture on it.
It has the creepy obelisk on it and a bunch of like mind flayers. Because mind flayers are all the rage right now in everything D&D.
Yep, they're in Baldur's Gate.
Yep. Well, good for them. They deserve some time.
Yeah, they deserve brains.
Yep. Can't all be red dragons, people.
Can't all be red dragons. We also got Tentacle Kitty, which is a series of plushes, which are little cats with tentacles.
Yep, imagine a delightful cat head perched on a cute little octopus butt.
And we have the traditional Tentacle Kitty, which you can buy clothes for, which is very cool.
They've got like ranger and healer and barbarian, all these little clothes kits.
If you haven't seen them, there's a picture on our Facebook page. Go to the Facebook page and check them out.
And then there's the baby ones that are like actual
different colors.
Different colors and like they're one's a golem and there's like a bunch of different types.
Yep. Very cute.
Yeah, they're delightful. If you're a quirky weird person or know quirky weird people, and I think I know the answer to that question in our business, then you want to take a look at these.
But yeah, they're cool little plushes. All right, let's talk about comics for September 20th. Let's start with Captain America number 1. This is J. Michael Straczynski, who has been doing his own little small publishing company thing, and his own little shared universe, returns to Marvel to take on Captain America. With art by Jesus Saz, and it's really nice art.
Was the last thing
it's gonna be Jesus, right?
Is it?
I assume so.
You're right. There's a little. It's Jesus.
Yeah.
There's a little U up there.
Was the last thing that Straczynski did for Marvel? Was it Thor? Was it that long ago?
Other than he might have done like some little odds and ends, but yes, I think that was his last major one.
Okay.
But he's got, I think, for his Marvel era, he's got, I would say, three big claims to fame. It's at least the early days of his Spider-Man run. We all had a really good time with it until some combination of editorial edicts and maybe a few of JMS's own bad instincts kind of left a bad ending to it. But otherwise, pretty cool. Really good Thor run. I mean, he revived Thor. He straight up did it when Thor had been gone for years.
It's true.
And then I also think his Squadron Supreme, a.k.a. Supreme Power, his kind of Marvel, adult mature readers stuff that he did that was like the sort of serious superheroes was let him kind of do that other side of his interests and go darker. But this is a return to his more serious, more Marvel-y superheroes. Yeah. You don't get more superhero than Cap. And although this is kind of in a way, a thoughtful first issue, a sort of more character-centric thing. Where there's some incidents of action, but it's almost more like to show that Cap's life doesn't go more than like a few days without, like, say, there's a neat sequence where Sue Storm from the FF comes up and she's like, I don't have time to explain a lot, but here's the situation we're dealing with. Can you help us? We could use you.
If you're Cap, you're getting asked for help a lot, probably.
Yeah, I imagine so. But the core, and it's a cool scene, by the way. His art on this is great.
Yeah,
it's really nice.
It's really pretty.
But the core of this, and it's interesting, is that his apartment building that he's living in is getting foreclosed on.
Yep.
The super is getting fired. They're gonna tear it down, and he calls up Tony Stark for a loan and buys the building.
Yeah, he's like, these people will be kind of turned out on the streets and. Not a lot of them have the resources that I do, so he's going to try and use the resources he's got to help him out.
And then, being Cap, he also starts like doing the renovations on the building himself and all that kind of thing.
Cap is the super,
And it's kind of a neat idea of Cap like owning a building and providing a low cost housing for people who live there for a long time. It's a thing that sort of ties a modern day of story into. A superhero story.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there is going to be some difficulties, and it's not all just going to be like the Rhino attacks it.
Probably the Red Skull is a slumlord in the same block, and they'll be competing landlords.
I think it's going to be more like there's a slumlord on the same block.
I'm just going to say this. Steve is just copying Clint at this point. He owned a building, too.
Did Clint own a building?
Yeah, I mean, that was the whole Fraction.
That's right, the Fraction run.
Yeah.
Nick, the Fraction run is a blur in my head. The Grunewald is very strong. The Fraction, I remember there's Pizza Dog is in it.
So you're saying
and don't forget the Tracksuit Mafia.
And the Tracksuit Mafia.
Those are the two things that occurred in it.
I remember those two things.
You're saying that version of Hawkeye would never buy a building and help people?
That version of Hawkeye could never have managed to... unless Mockingbird really helped him, he would not have been able to buy the building.
He would miss his first payment.
He would forget to show up for the signing ceremony. And that's what I liked about that Hawkeye.
Yeah. But, Nick, are you saying that JMS is copying Matt Fraction and has never had an original thought in his life?
Wow. That's what I heard.
That's what I'm hearing.
That's what I heard.
Sure. Let's go with that.
Anyway, it's a good first issue. I think we all liked it.
It is.
Yes.
And then another big one from Marvel this week, Predator versus Wolverine. One of these, why didn't this happen sooner? You guys have had these rights for a while.
It's clear that, I don't know, is 20th Century Fox, do they have both Alien and Predator licenses?
Yes.
Yep.
But however they have released it to Marvel, they must have been rather tentative about what they wanted to do as crossovers. So that they were like, mainly like, they're like, you just tell Predator and Alien stories, and maybe you can do one crossover.
Yeah.
I just want them to do like an Elseworlds or a weird one-off of like how they did like Marvel Zombies or something, and have
like aliens
the alien invades the Marvel Universe, and just have it fun. Just go nuts.
You see like, you know, like, if AIM or Hydra would be trying to totally be, they'd be the ones to try and weaponize it and control it. There's a ton you could do with it, but working with what we have,
yes.
Wolverine versus Predator is a very focused idea, and my understanding from previous stuff I had read was that it would be sort of the clashes over the decades, because Wolverine is so long lived, with a single Predator that like neither of them fully takes down the other, and that is the case because this flashes back quickly after, although you see him in the present,
it's kind of
shredded.
Weird. It's kind of weird to open it in the present. I would have gone right to the night, but it starts.
I think
the
1900s. They did want to set up at least the framework that is they will meet again.
Basically, the Wolverine origins era.
Yeah, this is 1900s Wolverine.
Yep, he's young
versus Predator.
He looks like he's physically like, I don't know, 18 or something.
Yeah. But he's living in the Canadian wilderness.
And then it jumps to like the 90s, which is kind of a weird, which is a weird place to jump. So like,
setting up, I think, the next issue. The vast majority of it is in the
1990s. Well, the 90s era is definitely, it makes a ton of sense. That's when he's working for Department
H.
It's setting up the next issue.
I guess my question is, are they going to skip all 90 years? I figured there'd be like 1900 and then 1940s, like in World War II. But it's like 1900 and then 1990s?
That's
odd.
That's
a big jump.
But it seems like the reason I want to downplay it is because it's actually towards the end, and most of this issue is about a extended battle and skirmish, and also some other skeevy business going on in the Wolverine origins era.
Yep.
But it is clear that the next issue will focus on essentially Wolverine and his team of like what do they call them? Team X, with you know Maverick and Sabretooth and all of those those like Black Ops guy mutants dudes are going to go up against a crew of Predators, a hunting squad or something like that. And I'm like, okay, that's kind of a fun idea too. This is not a sort of reinvention of the wheel, but I think people who like if the concept kind of sounds cool to you, probably a good
you'll
chance you're
like
going to dig this.
And if you've been enjoying the current Wolverine book, it's the same writer.
Benjamin Percy.
And if you haven't been enjoying the current Wolverine book,
stay the hell away.
It's still the same writer, but it's also Predator and Wolverine.
You won't understand any of the continuity if you haven't been reading. No, just kidding.
This is a weird book. The Uncanny Spider-Man. This is it's Nightcrawler as Spider-Man.
Right. I knew that from months ago, and I was like, oh, does Spider-Man ask him to fill in? Does he just do it because it's a neat swashbuckler thing? I have not read it yet, so does that get
answered?
Yes, that
is actually... They basically, somehow in the course of the X-Men stuff, which I've not been reading, Nightcrawler's been accused of murder. And so he has taken...
He probably did it. Have you seen him? He looks like a demon.
Yep. So he takes on identity as Spider-Man in, like, Central Park, which is where the Krakoa was or something.
The main gate in Central Park.
Yeah.
So basically,
so he's doing that to hide who he is.
Yep. And he's having a little trouble with Spidey because English is not his first language, so he's having trouble with his quips. He does have an astral sword for some reason.
Well, that sounds like something that would have happened to him.
Yeah,
sometimes
he's
having some sword fights. Do people ever say, hey, Spider-Man didn't used to have a devil tail?
Yeah. Yes, they do. but also, basically, Spidey loaned him his extra costume.
Okay.
As a thing. One of Spider-Man's
so this was
villains.
Done with Spider-Man's blessing.
Yes. One of Spider-Man's villains is working with Orcus.
Okay.
The evil anti-mutant organization. And another Spider-Man foe shows up at the tail end of it.
It's Juggernaut?
No. Anyway, Spoken? Yeah. It's got nice art by Lee Garbutt. if the idea of Nightcrawler posing as Spider-Man sounds interesting to you, you want to check this out.
I don't know that artist, but yeah, I remember flipping through
it. Lee Garbage has been around forever.
He's been around forever. He's the one that gets that.
Originally from the Highwaymen.
Yes. He's got sort of a Frank Quitely
vibe. Originally from the Highlands.
he's got a Frank Quitely vibe going in some of his stuff. Although not as much lately. He's changed a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's good stuff. If you've been following Dark Droids, or if you've not, there's a one-shot called D-Squad.
That is Star Wars Dark Droids.
Which Nick says is a callback to a Clone Wars episode I don't remember.
It's a Clone Wars arc. It was a three-episode arc in
Clone Wars. Arc I don't remember.
Is this a one-shot?
I believe this
I thought
is
it was a little
miniseries. Nope, it's a one-shot.
Oh, okay.
Well, remind me, what made the droids go wacky?
No, it's a miniseries.
Why are the droids all hyped up?
Because of the evil Ultron entity that is taking
some kind
over.
Some kind of weird energy.
Some original thing, but is it like working for the Empire, or is it its
own thing? Eternal has merged with ancient droid intelligence. It's become something new and terrifying.
It's running amok across the Empire, and basically
the
everyone.
Is corrupting droids on both sides of the Galactic Civil War.
Oh, the crawl, day, the crawl,
but
Randy, the crawl.
But I think that's interesting. I like the idea that this isn't just one more scheme from the Empire. This is everybody is.
Well, I think I saw an ad for the next Darth Vader, and it has Darth Vader fighting a bunch of the K2S droids, the security droids that have been corrupted. Which I'm like, oh, I've played that version. That's hard to kill all of those people.
But anyway, this is R2-D2 and one of those pit droids and Chopper and somebody else. I feel like there's another like astromech droid, but they are all working together to try and stop.
Are all the word balloons like bleep doop blop?
A lot of them are, yes.
Juir or Arps?
But there is some funny. Basically, the pit droid speaks English and he translates between R2 and Chopper, who do not like each other.
I was going to say I would feel like you would have to have someone in there.
R2 and Chopper don't like each other?
No.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I don't know if I would have guessed
both,
that.
You know, they're both very independently minded.
They're both surly droids.
Yeah. That actually makes sense to me. They'll
get into a swearing contest.
Yeah. On the indie side of things, we've got Rare Flavors. This is the Ram V and Felipe Andrade who did Many Deaths of Layla Starr.
Yep.
Which was a story of a... I think it was a woman who kept dying and coming back. It was
right.
Hindu
it was mythology. A sort of bureaucratic Hindu afterlife.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it wasn't actually Shiva or anything, right?
I thought it was rooted in that.
Yeah. Well, this is definitely rooted in sort of things.
Yeah, this is a Rakshasa, which I believe, and you may know from D&D, but they come from Indian mythology. They're sort of flesh-eating demons.
Yep.
Right.
This guy... He is taking the form of sort of an overweight human, and he really liked Anthony Bourdain, who died, and now he decided he's going to become the new Anthony Bourdain.
Classic Rakshasa.
By making a food documentary. And he goes to this documentarian who's retired and tries to convince him to get on board. It's really good. At the same time, there's some people hunting him.
I was going
to
say, that sounds like a very bizarre premise, but it's the execution that kind of really delivers something
very
unique.
Would we all agree, we've read superhero comics by Ram V, but it's his indie comics, I think, where he's shining.
That's his best stuff.
His indie comics as well.
Many Deaths of Layla Starr, and I haven't read this yet, but I suspect that from y'all's description, I'm going to like it too.
He's also working with the same artist. Is it Philippe
Andrade?
Andrade, and it's... Just stunning.
It's beautiful. And the first issue of this is great. It's really, really good.
I think I have a soft spot when you do something that also incorporates food.
Yeah.
There's a recipe in here for chai.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, that I don't even like tea, and that sounds really,
good.
Really
good.
Yeah,
agreed. Yeah. And he goes into the guy who makes the tea and why he makes it. It's a family recipe. And it's really interesting.
A really cool exploration of...
Image has a new book called Hexagon Bridge, which is a weird concept. It's a sort of high-minded sci-fi. Nick, I know you liked this one.
Yeah, it's sort of a
couple, right? They're explorers, but they're also a couple.
Yes,
married couple.
Yeah, married couple. It's set in the year 4040, I think.
Like a 2,000 years in the future ish. Yeah.
And basically, they have found this extra-dimensional space where they're cartographers in a lot of ways. They're building they're trying to build a map of this. Space and then
like
they
an
get
alternate dimension.
Yeah, and then they get lost, and somehow they're
in the glimpses I see of this world. It has like buildings and things, but they're constantly fragmenting apart in these really visually stunning ways, and like a changing or something.
Because AI, like a computer generated AI that is like super, super advanced, is like changing the kind of landscape at will. And it's kind of, it's just a really interesting concept that's dealt with, and then stuff back home that is also
I was told that, according to the solicit, that their clairvoyant daughter and intelligent, like, artificially intelligent robot has to try and maybe get them out or something.
Yeah, I think they're going to mount a rescue attempt. I don't know.
It reminded me, if you've ever seen, like, European graphic albums, not the kind of more violent-minded ones, like you tended to get in heavy metal, but that level of art.
Yeah.
Because it's really stunning and beautiful. But like a, yeah, a kind of a high-concept sci-fi piece that I think if for visuals alone you should flip through this, but sounds like a cool premise, fun premise, too.
I forget what the writer has done, but he's also, I think, done some comic work, but I think he's a novelist as well. And I can't remember.
Okay.
But I really enjoyed this first issue. I thought it was great.
It reminds you a little bit of Annihilation.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit
sort
like
of
that.
Notion of like weird exploration of this alternate space.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah, I get that.
Image also has Jack Kirby's Star Warrior starring Adam Starr and the Solar Legion, which is early Jack Kirby stuff.
Oh, is it early Jack Kirby? I guess I assumed it was like one of those weird
1940.
Wow.
22-year-old Jack Kirby created this new this new character before. He did three issues before moving on to with Joe Simon to make Captain America.
Oh, wow. So this has got to be, like, in the vein of, like, a Buck Rogers, Flash Gordon type of dude,
it,
right?
It is that, yeah. It also, you know that I Will Destroy the that weird...
Yeah, the Stardust, it was I Will Destroy All the Known Planets or Civilized Planets guy. Yeah,
it
kind of a little balls trippy.
It has a little bit of vibe of that. It is very strange.
Well, it's written and drawn by Tom Scioli, a guy who's been both kind of an underground comic and... cartoonist and a sort of more mainstream guy.
It says but remixed by Tom Scioli.
Oh, interesting. So he might have redialogued or redrawn.
It's adapted from the original stories, characters, and artwork created by Jack Kirby.
Huh.
So it is. It is. I'm not sure exactly what the how. How
at
much
a glance,
this
I thought I was looking at Scioli's artwork, but
I'm pretty sure this is a remix of Kirby stuff.
Okay.
Like maybe.
But what I was going to say is he does a Kirby pastiche style, like a really interesting one. And so, certainly the interest makes sense. Last week, he was the guy who wrote and drew both the Stan Lee and Jack Kirby biographical comics that came out. And this one is like a straight, you know, either adaptation or reimagining in some way of this property. But that sounds kind of cool. I mean, I know it's a little bit niche, but people are fascinated with Kirby or old school, like, space opera comics.
Yep. Then we get to DC. DC's Dawn of DC stuff picks back up after Night Terrors.
Yep.
So I guess the big notable one is Wonder Woman number one.
Yep.
Tom King.
We might not be able to.
Y'all know how we feel about Tom King, but if you like Tom King, you like Wonder Woman.
An unbiased opinion on you.
Yeah.
Then we have Green Lantern War Journal. This is Philip Kennedy Johnson, who's been doing Action Comics, amongst other things. Doing a John Stewart Green Lantern book.
I liked this one quite a bit, actually.
It's a good first issue.
You know what's interesting? I kind of quickly read it before the podcast here, and I mostly liked what I read. There was one or two sequences where I'm like, this is going to require a little bit more of a closer read. But it is interesting. I definitely liked it better than the regular Green Lantern one.
Well, yeah. It's
a lot more sci-fi.
It's a little more sci-fi. It's also a little more... character-centric because we get a little bit more about John Stewart and his family.
And his home life, which I haven't seen before.
No, I don't think so either.
Whereas with Hal, they're mainly seem to like emphasize cocky pilot, right? It's
right.
Like a little bit of the an endless maverick-type callbacks. John felt like more like a real person and not like just a concept.
Well, he wasn't just an ass kicker. He's a little bit more of a real person in some regards.
Here we see, as we were talking about this off mic, he's staying with his mother who's dealing with like dementia issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's
the introduction of a new villain.
Yep,
right.
Which I thought was like really creepy.
Yeah, and we're not clear on exactly what all is going on, but it seems like it may involve aspects of possibly Star Sapphires, possibly Black Lanterns. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I think so.
Or an offshoot of it.
A fusion or something like, or an alliance between them. And there's a pretty cool sequence with another Green Lantern.
Yeah, that my favorite thing about the new Green Lantern stuff is the idea that United Planets took over the administration of the Green Lantern Corps, and they basically turned it all bureaucratic, and they definitely are doing the all Green Lanterns are bastards.
Yeah, especially ones from Earth.
And this guy shows up, this alien shows up, and is basically like, you're illegally using a power ring. I'm going to take your house. And, man, does that not go well for him?
I also really like whoever this artist is. They're new to me.
Yeah, I thought it was very effective.
I like the design of John's costume, too. It's got sort of a military jacket kind of thing to it. Yeah.
It's cool. I think we'll be keeping an eye on it.
Yeah. Then we have the return of Nightwing, issue 106. This is a start of a new nautical adventure, tying back to his days as Amnesiac Rick Grayson.
Yeah, a storyline that was, I want to say, in the fandom, fairly universally disliked.
Yep.
And yet, when the handful of times Taylor has called it back, has been really good.
And they also introduce a new concept of a sort of aquatic secret society in Bloodhaven that's going to lead into a pirate adventure for Nightwing.
It's a ton of fun. That was really cool.
It's a ton of fun.
Such a good idea. And
art by Stephen Byrne?
Yep, Stephen Byrne, who did the Power Rangers Justice League.
Yep,
it's good. You know, obviously, it's hard to beat...
Bruno Redondo. True.
But this is very good.
And then Tom Taylor also returns with Titans this week. Another good issue.
I really like this issue. There is an infiltration of a possible Brother Blood church.
Yep.
With a what do you call it? A Changeling and Nightwing, and I love their banter in it.
I didn't think that Brother Blood is a hard sell for me.
Yep.
And I like the way they used it here.
And I think part of it was just like they. Right at the moment, because there's a big mystery going on as to exactly what's happening and whether there's some reformed people in, like, the Brother Blood Church or not. But the use of, like, Wally, who they know from, like, a sort of a prophetic thing is, like, doomed to die.
So in the next, like, 3 days or 2 days?
And 48 hours, yeah. They're, like, trying to sideline him, and he's like, look, you guys are all about to go up against...
That was my favorite thing, when Wally's like, I'm not staying here.
He's like, you guys always face death every day, and that's what we do. Mm-hmm. He's like, if you think that just because we got this bad omen that I'm not going to do it, you're crazy.
It's great, because he shows up, and Nightwing's like, you're not supposed to be in the field. He's like, yeah, you can lose an argument later.
Well,
and here's the thing, going back to what you just said, Randy, is, like, we've seen Brother Blood in so many instances. They're all the same. Every single time it's the same shtick. And here we get a change up finally of something a little bit different.
Yep.
And they've got a problem because Tempest is sort of working with them, and they're not sensing that he's being, like, mind controlled.
Correct.
I don't know if this is, like, some sort of Trump analog or what, but it is like, what if your friend is in a cult? It is kind of definitely like that, and they're like, and they're also like, but there is that sort of question of, like, what if the cult or some aspect of it is reformed?
And Beast Boy's getting to use his powers in fun ways.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, for me, some of the best stuff was, though, that banter. I loved the thing with him and Nightwing. They're like, if this doesn't turn out to be a Brother Blood church, then we're just going to be heroically breaking into a church.
Yep.
And they're like, and if we don't find anything, then he's like, then we're going to heroically leave.
By the way, there's also a great Beast Boy shows up in Nightwing.
Yeah.
And is basically running around as a dog, as a puppy, playing with Bitewing.
Yes.
Which is great.
Yeah. Nightwing is like, I know why Bitewing is like he's a puppy, and that's why he hopped up on the bed and made a mess. He's like, why are you doing it? He's like, I'm an exuberant, or something like that. Or he's like, I was just drafting off of him.
Superman is back with a new storyline.
It was a really cool first issue.
Yeah, new artist. It looked like fun. That's on my to read
the
list
art's
for later.
The art is very striking. I really like its vibe.
They're doing some really good stuff. Lois is now the editor in chief of the planet, which is really fun. Superman is running the Super Corps, which was formerly Lex Corps, which is really fun. And the mystery villain in this is a good villain. So.
If you told me a while ago that Mercy would be Clark's underling at this point, I'm like, that doesn't work. And somehow
it works. He doesn't trust her.
No, God no. Why would you trust her? But it's a really cool dynamic.
Yeah.
And there's so many good, like, lines in there.
You know what's funny? A little credit Smallville's way. One of the things that they did, and they did it, like, so much that it was kind of obnoxious, but they would just always mix up the players. Yeah. They're like, oh, you know what, in this one, Clark's mom has to go work for Lex Luthor's dad, Lionel, for a while, and, like, let's just see what weird sparks we get from that, you know, what the alliance is like. Does she see, bring out this other side of him? She knows she's probably being played, but, like, they were always doing stuff like that, and this is, it can be very effective to just kind of change up the dynamics.
I would like to not be included in any kudos for Smallville.
Randy doesn't like a show that ran for, like, nine seasons.
Did you not watch Smallville at all?
I did watch a couple seasons of it. I do not like it.
Okay.
Yeah, Randy's a big wham-wham baby.
I liked it. It was fun.
We also got the facsimile edition of ROM's Space Knight, ahead of the omnibus coming out. I had never read this. This is a toy-themed comic from, like, 1979. And, Dave, I know you and I both have a fondness for, like, the Dire Wraith War that bled into the Marvel Universe.
Yep. I had a decent number of ROM comics as a kid, but I just got randos off the spinner rack. And overall, he fed into, like, an early interest I had in, like, those alien invasions where aliens can shape change or take over people.
Right.
So, like, Invasion of the Body Snatchers and The Thing and all that stuff. This had an element of that, but, like, in a superhero world. So, the premise of ROM was generally that he was hunting these scary shapeshifters that were Skrull-like, but they also used, like, dark magic.
Wouldn't he just obliterate them with his gun?
No. It looked like they were disintegrated, but he was sending them into limbo.
But he does kind of obliterate them sometimes, and people see that, and they're like, oh, he's the monster.
Right.
Yeah, they
just see him shooting people.
The first issue is interesting, because these are, like, a long-time infiltrator, and so, like, they're like, Mike Collins and Perry Sykes are dead? She's like, and the girl, who will eventually become his girlfriend, and I think his wife, she's like, you murdered two people in cold blood who I went to high school with.
Yeah, this is like, Virginia, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And he's like, they were Dire Wraiths.
Remind me, who wrote this?
This is Bill Mantlow.
Okay.
Bill Mantlow probably was the best person they had for these kind of things, along with Larry Hama, because Bill Mantlow did all of the Micronauts, and then all of Rob.
Okay.
Yep.
And so he could handle, like, treating toy properties seriously. And really, the toy had, like, almost zero lore. Everything was invented. And eventually this guy would, like, crossover with Mantlo's own Hulk run that was going on at the time, crossover with X-Men, and ultimately, like, in the comic, they came to a conclusion, like, the Wraiths were defeated.
Yeah.
And, like, ROM got his kind of ending. Like, it was sort of a best-case scenario. The only downside is that now, because the license went away, Marvel can't really mention ROM by name. They can talk about the Space Knights and other stuff abstractly. But yeah, it's kind of fun to see the first issue to tie into, what, the omnibus that they're going to put out.
The first issue's good. It's good, and it's fun. It's also, the first issue is just some bonkers ads, and I forgot the 70s ad. There's, like, the
it's a full facsimile.
How to gum fight with Hubba Bubba Gum.
Hubba Bubba Gum, yeah. They imagined that kids would have, essentially, shootouts in the street over who could blow the biggest bubble.
Right.
Remind me again, Randy, that the omnibus is coming out in, like, a couple of months?
I don't know.
But I think we're thinking it's only going to be like a one-off time thing that they're going to do.
That's our guess, but it is going to be, they'll do multiple ones.
Yeah.
It'll probably be like Master Kung Fu. They'll probably have it for a little while, and then it'll be
and
gone.
Then we'll never see it again because of the license.
Yeah.
Probably, yes.
But yeah, I was a fan of ROM throughout its run, and what I remember is, I think, like, early on, it's, he kind of, like, ends up freeing a lot of the people in, I think, Clairton is,
yes,
like, the name
Clairton
of their fictional
town,
city.
Yeah.
And, like, oh, they come to know ROM, and, but there's, like, you know, Wraiths everywhere. They've also infiltrated Russia and stuff like that, and that would lead to stories later on with the Soviet super soldiers and all this, and it was just, like, it's a cool book.
We got number 2 of Alpha Flight this week, number 3 of TMNT Stranger Things, I think the final What If, Dark Carnage, and Last Saga for a while. And I think that about wraps up comics for the week.
Second issue of Uncanny Avengers.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
And second issue of,
Yeah, so we will take a break, and we're going to come back and talk about some trailers and some other stuff. All right, so first, before we get to the trailers, let's talk about a bit of Star Wars news. They've announced, Steven Glover, Donald Glover's brother, announced, he's like, hey, yeah, the Lando show is actually not a show, it's a movie.
Yeah, I mean,
which,
Rennie, you said you wanted a show.
I'm a little disappointed because what I wanted, because we know, we know they talked to Billy Dee Williams. He was talking about something, and I was like, I thought this was going to be kind of a fun old Lando at the Sabacc table
telling stories,
and like every episode we get an episode of like Lando's adventures.
Yeah, I wonder if it's possible that like behind the scenes. I mean, fans have been asking for that since this first possibility, and they might there may be a certain we're not going to do what the fans ask us to do. But I wonder, is there, like, Billy Dee Williams is kind of getting older?
Yes.
Is there any possibility that, like, of course there's a possibility. He's just not, like, physically up for it?
He was the one who posted about it.
He posted that
they were talking to him. Yeah.
He might have been enthused, but, like, if he's got any cognitive decline,
How old is Billy Dee Williams?
I don't know. He's old.
Is he older than Harrison Ford?
No, I think but some people, like, Harrison Ford is pretty old, though, and some people show it more than others, true. You know. But, yeah, you know, there's no way we can really know their reasoning behind it.
Billy Dee is 84. I do think
there's definitely stuff you can do in a TV show that you cannot in a movie.
I think
the Lando is a character that seems like he does lend himself to many adventures, just like Han Solo. Yeah,
I'm not crushed or anything. I'm just a little disappointed.
Yeah, seem a little crushed.
It seems that the Star Wars have been disappointing you lately.
No, I just don't like Ahsoka as much as you like it. That's it. That's all it is.
And you didn't like Andor.
I did not like Andor.
So I'm just
Andor
saying.
Andor was fine.
But you know what? I have to give Randy's due. He liked the anime stuff that they put out.
Star Wars Visions was good.
He occasionally reads a Star Wars comic. He's not like boo on Star Wars.
I'm not a Star Wars hater.
Not like the Randy of 10 years ago who was giving up on Star Wars.
Yes, that guy.
I keep forgetting about Vision Season 2. Vision Season 2 is really good.
It's got some fun stuff in it.
Weirdly,
yeah.
The thing that I think is good about this is that a movie gives them less time to screw up. It's almost like that sort of Firefly Serenity thing. It's
sure.
Like, well, it won't be around long enough to go bad.
Was Donald Glover's brother involved in Atlanta?
Yes, he was.
So that seems to be a good thing.
We can kind of assume that they're gonna know what they're doing.
Yeah, for sure.
As I think about it, I was like, yeah, Lando, like Han, seem like characters who would be. It might be coolest to have multiple adventures and build on them.
I don't think it's gonna happen.
I have one stipulation.
Yep.
Lobot, damn it! Give us Lobot.
You know, with only 2 hours, I don't have time for Lobot. 10 hours, sure, plenty of Lobot. Lobot subplot.
Dave, I might be switching to I would rather
say the Lobot.
You know what? You know what you get in a movie? Nobot.
No, nobody talks about the Lobot fulcrum, but it's there.
Yeah, well, you know, Charles Soule, I believe, in his first Lando miniseries.
He was like his best bud.
Yeah, he was his bro-bot.
His bro-bot.
In the movie, he's just a guy who takes orders, but in Empire Strikes Back. But the comics have shown...
That's what I want a little bit more clarification, because in Empire, he really just felt like a robot.
Right, right. He did to me, too. Like, he would be a guy who was using that for calculations, but at no point... But, like, didn't really turn off.
Right.
But in the comics, he clearly did. He was basically like a Mentat in Dune.
Yeah.
He was... He could give you all these intense calculations, probably cheated cards, all kinds of stuff Lando would like. Yep. Of course, I suspect in a casino that would go over poorly because you can see his giant head computer. which means he'd be like, Lando would be like, what if you wore a hat? Why?
We're not going to see the fun montage of Lobot trying on hats in a movie. I'm just saying.
They might make time for it. They should make time for it.
Lobot in a fez. Lobot
in a fez. Lobot in a fedora.
Now keep in mind,
bowler.
Space fez. Space fedora.
Space bowler.
Shut up.
Yeah.
What about like a wicket skin cap?
Oh, no.
Why is it always a wicket? Can't it just be an Ewok?
No, it's wicket.
Wicket.
Wicket must die.
Lobot's space haberdasher.
Turns out Lobot killed.
Lobot wearing boots made out of little wicket's feet.
What about if he wore the shaman's feet?
You mean low gray?
Yes, low gray.
There's three named, notably named Ewoks.
Low gray, Wicket, and...
Oh, man.
There's only two.
No, there's another one. All the Wicket figures, or all the Ewok figures. I'm starting to call them like calling vampires Draculas.
Low gray, they're all Wickets.
keep going, and I'm looking up the other named Ewok.
Is the sexy Wicket?
I mean, you act like Wicked wasn't already sexy.
He's bringing sexy Wicked back. Let's talk about Dream Scenario, the new A24 Nicolas Cage movie.
This looks a little bonkers.
This is bonkers.
Pause.
His name was Pause?
What's the name?
Chief Chirpa.
Chief Chirpa.
Yeah. I had all of those figures because I was an Ewok fan in 1984 and still.
I'm still an Ewok fan.
Anyway, Dream Scenario is the name of this movie.
Yes.
It is basically Nicolas Cage in like a bald wig or something. He's basically wearing he's clearly going bald. He's like a little overweight. He's playing a paunchy like college professor.
Yep.
And he starts showing up in people's dreams. Like a lot of people's
dreams. And not just like the members of his class.
No,
it's like it's just
people
random
who don't know him.
Right. As though there was some weird psychic phenomena, something supernatural, who knows.
And then he goes viral, and it like changes his life. But there's weird stuff going on in dreams.
The tone of the video is at first quirkily up the trailer. I mean, quirkily upbeat as this unusual guy finds himself catapulted to a strange stardom, and then it kind of goes a little dark as you kind of they suggest sort of the darker side of fame, weird obsessive fans, people who don't want him in the dreams, even though it seems like he never wanted it, wasn't trying to. And there's a few surrealist looking glimpses in the thing, which I'm sure are part of people's dreams, when you see their dreams.
And if we didn't say this up front, this is an A24 movie.
I did.
Yep.
Oh, did you? I'm sorry.
Yep. But we had to pause for a Chief Chirpa break.
Yeah, Chief Chirpa interruption.
Well
known Chief Chirpa interruption.
But yes, it's A24, which means it's secretly a story about processing grief.
Sure.
No. This looks to me like the themes are right up front and center about dealing with. I think if I were to say this surreal story connects to anything, I would say it's like viral fame online and things like that, influencer fame and stuff like that, and how a person who is in no way, shape, or form ready to deal with the consequences of that suddenly must.
But for all we know, the latter half of this movie might be some weird horror entity.
It's a tie into Hereditary.
Sure.
Paimon the Demon will show up.
I'm curious to see this when it shows up on streaming.
It looks good to me. If it gets good reviews, I might see this at the theater.
All right. We got the trailer for Goosebumps, the Disney Plus show. This stars Justin Long. It looks like a long-form story that is going to have
when Justin
references.
Long is in it, it's always a long form story.
But it looks like it's going to have references to other Goosebumps. I've never read a Goosebumps in my life.
Same.
I think I watched the TV show.
But you seem to know some of the things, Dave. You knew like
it's just
Slappy's
kind of
something.
It's in the lore because he's like on a lot of the he's on more books than one.
And you watch the did you watch the recent movie with Jack Black? Because Slappy was involved in that.
No, I watched the trailer for it once.
Oh, okay, I mean. I liked that movie. I thought it was a fun.
Oftentimes, a teen or preteen's first horror spooky thing.
Yeah.
What was before Five Nights at Freddy's came along? That's how kids got into spooky.
Sure.
Yep.
Or if you were from a previous generation, you just read Stephen King at age 8.
Yes.
That's true.
Yep.
Clive Barker at age 10, and then
your parents are like, "Oh, he's reading. It's
fine. Reading. It's so good."
This looks like a Disney. I mean, Disney Plus has this the YA speed. Like I've seen their stuff that's like YA stuff.
Yeah, speed.
Yeah, speed. And this.
I was trying really not hard to. Squirt water.
I have found I think I've had my fill of Yaspeed.
Yeah.
It
doesn't look great. It's funny. Justin Long has a solid horror tie-in. He was
because of Barbarian.
Not just because of Barbarian though. He's also in
Jeepers Creepers
right. And really is good in it. I would say
he's a talented actor.
Here he's playing looks like a guy who he's a dad, I think.
Well, he's like a new teacher at the school.
He's a teacher, okay.
And he just moved to town, and he gets possessed by some ghost that lived in that house.
Yep, and
maybe was killed by a group of teenagers.
Kids stop killing people.
Sounds like how Freddy came about.
I'm sure it'll be along those same lines.
You know what? Freddy Krueger had a point. They burned him to death. He didn't do anything wrong. He was in his rights to. Oh, was
I
he
mean,
also a pedophile?
Yeah, he was.
I thought he had just done that. I thought.
Wait,
he was
he a pedophile or just merely a child killer?
I think it may have. Gone to child killer.
I thought he was a lovable scamp.
He is not a lovable scamp. You're thinking of Michael Myers.
Oh, Michael Myers, a lovable scamp.
He was a lovable scamp. He that just killed a babysitter.
Yep, he's just like, or his sister's boyfriend, depending on the continuity.
Right. Yeah, depending on continuity.
He's like, hey, don't have sex, it's obviously wicked.
Yep. He was trying to save her from eternal damnation. In a way, he's a hero for all of us.
He'll be a speaker at the next Republican yes. convention.
Yes, he's definitely
He's trying to take it back to traditional morality.
Yes. And now Mike Myers just stands silently at the podium for 10 minutes and then gets a standing ovation. And then debates a chair.
I'll be blunt. This does not look amazing.
It does not look amazing. Yeah.
It would have to sort of surprise us.
Yeah, I need to hear some reviews on this one before I hit play.
In a similar vein, also in Yacht Fiction, also Disney Plus... we got Percy Jackson and the Olympians.
Trailer.
This is the third go at this. They've done two movies, yes. Both of which were apparently terrible.
I think the first one was solid. The second one was just eh.
My son went to Camp Half-Blood here in Austin a few times. I know he had a fondness for it. I don't know that he's going
to
watch this.
Just to double check, as somebody who knows the least about it here and has never seen any of them, the basic idea is, you know, teenagers who find out that they have... an ancient mythological god ancestry. So they've got, like, you know, you might have part of some Egyptian god's power. Or is it specifically Greek gods?
Always he did Greek do gods. Other series with Egyptian gods and all that, but that Percy Jackson
that was later.
You know Greek how Zeus like to come down off of his tower and have sex with women?
Turns out it wasn't.
But that's not part of the books, is it?
I mean, kind of, sort of.
But I thought if they all have it, does that mean that that all of the... I mean, yes, kind of all the gods were philanderers.
All the Greek gods like to get busy.
Yeah. Even in a Burger King bathroom.
But this is.
Are you saying Zeus was Humpty Hump? Yes, I am.
This is. I mean, this is their. This is his Rick Riordan sort of Harry Potter esque kind of thing.
Yeah.
Rick Riordan is a awesome author. He's a good guy.
Right. Not visibly a turf.
And so I wish him well. I would love for this to supplant Harry Potter, but I don't quite think it's going to manage it.
It's not easy to do that.
I will say though, this is a good trailer. This is a good mix of a trailer.
But I think Dave was in the place of, like, David, the trailer didn't tell you a lot. Like, it doesn't really tell you what's going on.
Is it because they kind of think that everybody kind of knows by now? If you're going to be interested, you know the gist of... Like, there's no point somebody says, like, you're the son of Zeus, you're a wizard, Harry.
That's the thing. I feel like they should have gone a little more basic with it.
Yeah, I think they're kind of... hoping for pre-existing fans of the property.
Sometimes your first trailer, though, is like a mood piece, and they just want to kind of show you the vibe and some effects.
But I thought
stuff.
Some of the effects...
Because you see like a centaur, a harpy, seemingly the silhouette of a big old mean minotaur. Yeah.
It all looked cool.
It's solid enough. It didn't make me want to watch it.
I will press play on this other than Goosebumps.
All right. I do have a fondness for the Greek mythology, so if I were to find out that it's getting good reviews... I'd still not watch it, but I'd consider it and then not do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, 5 years from now, you might press play if it's still on Disney Plus.
It's conceivable. It's conceivable.
We got the trailer for Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. As you all know, I don't like DC movies.
Yeah,
and I never have watched Aquaman, but I know.
But out of all of us, you're the one who saw the last DC movie in theaters.
I did. I saw Blue Beetle, and then immediately got super sick. Which I'm just saying.
Oh, interesting.
Interesting racism, Randy. That's what I think is interesting about this.
I will say, I think Dave and I enjoyed the first Aquaman.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah, and James Wan brought
I think it's a kind of messy movie in the sense that it does shotgun wed multiple genres. There is big, epic, like superhero Game of Thrones Atlantean stuff.
Yep.
There's a Tomb Raider sequence where they go into the desert and dig through tombs and stuff.
There's a Depeche Mode music video.
There is sort of a Depeche Mode music video.
It's like a Depeche Mode music weaponry creation.
It's a gear up scene. There's a lot of funny stuff in it. And then there's a little bit of like creepy horror stuff when he like goes to rescue his mom from Scary Place.
Yes.
But I liked its messy mixture of those things, and I like, Aquaman, and I think that this is a good portrayal of it. Like James Wan seems to have fun with the Atlantean world building and all that. I thought the effects looked like they could use some fine-tuning on this, but that wouldn't be uncommon to have happen.
Right.
But
it feels like it's the messy Aquaman we want.
Yeah. It is like an adventurous story.
Yeah.
He goes and does all kinds of things. And this, so the fun premise of this one, Let's see. Who is the big bad in it? Do they say?
What, in this,
Black Manta.
Oh, right. Black Manta is out for, like, pure revenge. Aquaman has a son now, and so they've at least teased the notion of something that did come to pass in the comics. Black Manta at one point did kill his son.
So this is supposed to take place... that's a little worrisome. It takes place 4 years after the first one.
Something like that, yeah.
And, yeah, Aquaman has a son. He's living at the lighthouse with his father.
Yes. They kind of got a happy ending in the thing. He rescued his mom from exile, reunited her with his dad, a.k.a. Boba Fett, Jango mm-hmm. Fett guy.
Yep.
Clone Trooper, every Clone Trooper guy.
Tamara Morrison.
Yep. And overthrew his evil brother... Is his brother Orm, or is he Orm?
No, Ocean Master.
Ocean Master Orm. Yes.
But Orm is his name,
yes.
Yeah.
He's Arthur.
Yeah, but I thought he had like, another Atlantean name.
Does he?
Like, yeah.
Arturos Mermanus.
I thought it was Orm, too. Maybe. But anyway, what's fun-looking about this is that it looks like... I think Black Manta is like uniting other evil king, like dangerous kingdoms and stuff.
He's got himself a new trident.
He's got a new trident. He's going to cause some sort of war.
Is it a zombie trident? Does it cause zombies?
Well, it looks like it might control the trench.
Right, which we think is going to, we know is going to be a thing in this.
Cthulhu kind of creature.
So anyway, whatever the case is, things are bad enough that Aquaman must free his brother from exile and work with him.
Dave, the name you're thinking of is Orin.
Oh, yeah. Very ballpark. And it there's, you know, very clearly the brothers kind of gaining some respect and maybe even in some ways forgiving each other as they go about working together to stop.
It looks like there's a buddy cop section of this movie.
Yeah. That honestly, is weird. I'm kind of there for it. I think
it looks
fun. I like James Wan's ambition, even if it is kind of sometimes messy. And otherwise, it looks like it has the things I liked about the first one. There's almost this like sort of family element. That there's going to be adventure-y stuff. There's going to be some spooky stuff. There's going to be some big kingdom, giant epic battles going on. Mm-hmm. Aquaman did ride not a Cthulhu, but like
that's close.
But it was like some kind of mega kraken thing.
Yeah, it was a mega kraken,
and it looked freaking cool.
It did. This is the only thing this one was missing is Willem Dafoe.
Which he did bring something to the table.
Yeah, Volca.
Honestly, I will probably see this unless it gets bad reviews.
Yeah.
I'd say if it gets a 70 or better, I will see it.
Okay. I'm going to guess it's going to be like a 63.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know, like, broadly how well, like, say, what did Rotten Tomatoes give the first one?
I don't know.
I thought it was in the 70s, but
could be.
Let's see.
Yeah, talking just about critical rating here, not viewer rating. Anyway, yeah, I'm interested. What's 66. Do we got any 66? Okay, so it falls just below my criteria. I guess I'd make a judgment call on that one.
But I am more excited about DC's television because we saw the teaser for Kite Man.
Oh, right.
Which is a spinoff from Harley Quinn. Their version of Kite Man, who is heavily featured in season 2, I think.
Yes.
Was great.
Married. He was going to get married to Ivy.
Yeah, and then instead
just to note, this is called Kite Man, Hell Yeah.
Hell Yeah.
Which I guess was
that's
a thing.
His catchphrase.
It's his catchphrase, okay. Yeah.
And I think, doesn't Golden Glider his girlfriend now?
Like yes.
She became, and she's like...
I believe so.
Yeah. And so it's two of them, and Darkseid's involved somehow.
You know.
It looks like... The show's Noonan's. If we got Hitman or Beitor or one of those guys, I'd be super happy.
I would love to see Beitor.
And when you say Noonan's, and people might not know what that is, Hitman. That's Noonan's Bar from Hitman by Garth Ennis. But it's now very... I bet there's not too many people that remember it if you didn't read it in the 1990s.
I'm putting money that Hackett is going to be the bartender.
I could see that. Wait, was Hackett the sort of loser dude?
He was the dude who cut his own hand off to avoid turned into a zombie by penguins.
Right, and they're like, that's not how the zombie virus works. Yeah.
Didn't he inherit the bar at the end of that,
He might have.
I think he did.
At any rate, it was a nice little nod, and there's going to be tons of that kind of stuff. If you've been watching Harley Quinn, it is a perfect blend of, like, making fun of DC's continuity, but also just a complete love letter to it.
I need to get back to it. I think I lost the thread somewhere.
And like, it's this season's a little weaker, to be honest. It's got some issues, but it's still really good.
Yeah.
I'm excited about the Kite Man spinoff, which is a thing I never thought I would say. I'll definitely watch that.
He is soaring above his Tom King iteration.
I forgot Tom King.
He used him in the Batman in his Batman run.
Quite yeah, like bad. Some sort of mega tragic background, yeah. And they intercut it because it was artsy with a Charlie
something.
Brown the kite caught in the tree, and then suddenly they're like he'd be like, oh no, my kite's in the tree again, and then you flip a page and he's like, your daughter didn't make it,
y'all.
It's so awesome.
I don't read Tom King books. Why are you putting this in my head? I didn't do any of this.
Right. In other news, Wonder Woman number one came out this week.
Oh, man.
Yeah, well, just know that it features multiple war crimes.
Yeah. Oh. Well, that hurts. All right, let's take a break. We're going to come back and talk about One Piece.
Let's take a break and mourn.
It is, in fact, Talk Like a Pirate Day.
We're not convenient
talk
timing.
Like pirates. We're going to talk about pirates.
Yeah, and in doing so, we will talk somewhat like pirates.
We'll talk like pirates did about other pirates. Like pirates are our peers.
What's interesting is that
we're talking about unique pirates.
A pirate show, but it is. It might as well be like an invented. What if pirates were completely different than what we know?
Yes,
because we're talking about One Piece, the live action Netflix show. You may know it from, like, 20 years of anime and manga. And if you do want to do that deep dive, or have you done that deep dive, it's, like, literally over, like, 1,000 episodes.
Yep.
Or 270 volumes.
Or 270 volumes. So if you were to watch, like us, and say, that's pretty good, and decide, I want a little bit more, well, brother.
Well, here comes the fire hose.
Here comes the fire hose.
You know those memes about how much difference it is between a billionaire and a millionaire?
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. It's like, well, if you started watching One Piece when you were a baby...
Right. You should, by the time the sun explodes...
You will have not seen all of it.
You will still have not seen all of it.
So Netflix has tried to do a lot of these.
They did Death Note, they did Cowboy Bebop, they did...
I feel like there was one other one.
Something else.
And all of them have bombed, pretty
People
much.
People did not like them, especially the manga fans.
Yep.
This
yep.
one, however, has somehow really gotten under people's skin.
Everybody's talking it up,
It seems
yeah.
like part of it was that there's notable interaction with the creator is working on it. And I don't know.
Well, he's getting to do a little bit of what like Kirkman did with Invincible, and kind of revision a little bit of like
right.
here
you,
and there, and kind
of do a little bit
up.
Of hindsight. Presumably, yeah. I hear that it like I know it reflects the manga and anime and stuff, but it, like kind of also does its own thing. I suspect they tie it together a little more tightly, and they yeah. know in hindsight some of the stuff. But I think just before we get into any of the details about what One Piece
yeah.
is, in case you don't know, because we didn't really know.
Nope.
And you started
we all
this, by the way.
Kind of liked it. Yeah, I went to watch it because people in like an indie kind of film group I follow on Facebook that talks a lot about movies, but kind of specifically indie-er type movies. Not the kind of guys who are like all anime fiends. Some of them are, but like it's not the big thing there. And these aren't like Marvel DC guys necessarily, or you know, Marvel movies guys. They were into it, and I was like, what are they seeing?
Yeah, well, my friend Les, who does the TV podcast with me, he hates anime more than I hate anime.
Yeah,
and he had watched some of it and said, no, it's good. And so that, amongst other friends, were talking about it. I was like,
what?
I was like, I'm gonna watch this when I get a Netflix back. And Netflix, I think Sex Education comes back next week, and then Fall of House
we're,
is Usher coming
up. On, yep.
And I was like, okay, it's time to re-up Netflix for a while. And so Dave mentioning that he was watching it, Nick was watching it. I'm like, okay, I'm going to re-up a little early, and I'll watch the episodes. And I'm glad I did. I've watched three. You guys watched six.
Six.
Yep.
Or Dave's almost through six.
I'm almost through six,
so,
yeah.
Before we go any further, let's talk about what the premise of One Piece is, which is explained
sure.
in the first, like, 5 minutes of the show.
Yeah, it's a kind of, it is, like, just very broadly a sort of surrealist pirate thing. There's very fanciful elements, almost like if you said, oh, it's a superhero pirate thing,
yep.
or it's pirates, but there's magic. It's kind of like that, but kind of almost like with some cartoony-ish elements, the way, have you ever seen the Jackie Chan movie or the movie
right.
Kung Fu Hustle? Now, the premise that launches it, Randy?
The premise is that this governor, this guy who's the head of the Marines...
Right. They're generally their peacekeeping force.
Yes. They have captured the pirate king, Gold Roger,
mm-hmm.
and they're going
yep.
to execute him in front of everyone, this giant crowd that's gathered outside
Massive
this
town
fortress.
Square kind
yep.
of thing.
And when they do this, his last words are basically a call to action. He's like, someone yells out, where's your treasure? He's like, my treasure is out along the main line. Go and find it.
Right, and he and that treasure that which is like his massive haul is called the One Piece.
The One Piece.
And whoever gets the One Piece becomes the
Pirate King.
Pirate King.
Right.
And so basically...
And you see the whole town square immediately start to, like, everybody goes running out
to become pirates.
To become pirates. It's a very energetic and fun opening. Even as, like, by the way, these guys are stabbing him with spears.
Yep.
But somehow he's grinning through it, like, ha ha ha, I've got the last laugh. And the main line in their kind of weird fanciful world is, like, kind of like, it seems like it's in it, like this big line of ocean along the equator,
yeah,
that runs between the massive, the big continents and stuff.
Yeah, this is not Earth. This is like there's different islands and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, it's its own weird little setting. One of those characters we'll find out is a young boy with a straw hat
named Luffy.
Full name Monkey D. Luffy.
I thought it was Luffy D. Monkey. Is it?
No, it's Monkey D. Luffy.
Monkey D. Luffy.
Okay. Although, for all I know, because of the way you do surnames in Japan, that it could be.
Yeah.
But everybody calls him Luffy, so that's the key thing to know.
And he grew up an orphan amongst pirates, this sort of kind-hearted pirates.
Yep. There's a weirdly high amount of kind-hearted people in this,
yes,
which is one of the things that makes it so charming.
So, for those who know Ted Lasso, Luffy is Danny Rojas as a pirate.
Yes, pretty much.
He's there's a lot of manga and anime that I've seen that has the trope of just somebody wants to go and become the best there is at something.
Yep, yep.
And this starts out at least with that same hook. He wants to become the Pirate King. And he's endlessly sort of exuberant and optimistic.
He thinks the best of people.
The first thing you see of him, he's just like, he's floating on like, is it like a little sort of raft?
Is that a little raft that's well, dry? That's it's sinking.
Floating, and he gets into a
barrel. And he says, the first thing he says, he's like, yeah, I'm going to be hitting the pirates, even though I don't know how to swim.
Yep.
He's in the middle of a boat sinking in the middle of the ocean.
Right. He looks actually as calm as can be in general. it's hilarious to kind of watch him maintain his resolve. It's not that he can't become worried at times think he's in a spot, but most of the time he's like, we can get out of this.
And
the actor who plays him is great.
He is fantastic.
I don't know the anime enough to say, like, oh, this is exactly how he is in that. It's probably a little different.
Yeah.
But I feel like he must embody him. And like, a sense of it comes through.
And that's true for a lot of their main... The three sort of main characters, at least early on.
Right. Yeah. He kind of, in that first episode, begins... through a series of misadventures, recruiting some people, most of whom don't particularly want
to
join him.
Part of his crew.
But because they kind of get tangled up in his web of adventure and like people chasing him and stuff like that, they wind up kind of becoming
his crew.
So
he winds up recruiting a thief named Nami, a woman who is she was basically trying to steal the map as well.
Yep.
And a pirate hunter named Zoro
or Rurouno Zoro.
And he's like almost like a sort of a vagabond samurai with green hair, and he's got a very kind of dour demeanor, very
three katanas.
Taciturn. Randy, you don't know the backstory on the katana yet.
I don't
right?
yet, no.
You will very shortly know the backstory on the katana.
He fights in the three sword style.
Yes.
Yeah, it is very cool. His introduction is super dope.
It is.
What is he's at somebody's grave or something?
Yeah,
he is.
And he basically somebody comes up and wants him to join the opaque.
It was a cool sounding name. A lot of these names are fun or goofy or cool.
And he turns him down.
What
and
is it that they
the
call? By the way, the money in the world. There's like a name for it. That's like. Like fruit or something like that, or seeds.
I forget what it's called.
But somebody's just like, I've got the seeds for that, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's clearly just what they call money.
And that leads us to the other thing. One of the big buy-ins is that there are a bunch of pirates and there's the One Piece.
Right.
The other big buy-in is that there's things called devil fruit.
Yes.
That if you eat will give you weird powers. For example, Luffy, when he's a kid, steals one of the devil's fruit that his pirate mentor Shanks.
Yep.
He overhears them saying, this is worth more than all our other treasure combined. He opens it, he eats this fruit, which clearly tastes terrible, and he becomes a rubber man.
Yes.
Gum-gum
fruit.
Yes, most of the time he is sort of walking around like a normal person, and he doesn't quite stretch like Mr. Fantastic or Plastic Man most of the time. But he can, and usually it's to like wind up for punches or to do like a singular action. It's almost like he could inflate the way Popeye might the moment he eats some spinach.
You know what it reminds me of is Kamala Khan.
Yeah, yeah.
I almost wonder
big
if Kamala
old oversized,
Khan was influenced by One Piece.
That makes sense. But yeah, kind of big old oversized hands.
He likes to call out his finishing move.
He does. That's obviously taken straight from the manga and anime.
And I want to say this, because that sounds silly. And it is silly.
It's silly but fun.
But the effects are also really good.
They are. I actually love the world it takes place in. Yes. You know, in the same way that, like, when they get, like, Gotham right in a video game or something like that, and you're like, oh, I'd like to step in there, and it just looks so good. I would like to go on, like, this would be actually be one of those worlds where, you know, like, oh, if you go to Lord of the Rings world, you might just get killed by orcs or Nazgul or something in, like, 5 minutes. Well, here I feel like I could have an adventure and possibly survive.
I unless know, you meet pirate some, things are rough.
Unless you meet
they
some
are, but, like, but there's a lot of good-hearted people, too. Yeah.
There
are
but there's also pirates. Evil clowns. There's,
there is an evil clown who is, in some ways, I believe the first or the second, I guess, boss we see.
Yeah.
This is a, this does have some of those manga tropes of, like, action. But in its way, no different from Buffy fighting like a vampire or something every episode.
The action sequences are spectacular.
They really are. They're all fun, and I never quite know what somebody's sword fighting technique or weird powers will be.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, there is a weird clown pirate.
There usually is a wanted poster that pops up.
Yeah, they do. They do a fun. It reminded me of the old. The kind of the way they would integrate in, like, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah.
And, like, when they would first appear and it would freeze frame on them and it would show, like, which what their name was would appear in, like, handwritten script. Here you see the wanted poster of, like, the sort of the major pirates. And I thought the clown was going to be my hard limit. But as it turns out, the more I saw of him, and he's creepy and he's a little jokerish, but he's kind of his own thing, too. The more I saw of him, the more I liked him.
Mm-hmm.
And he literally keeps people as a captive audience and forces them to, like, laugh at his jokes. It's like the, it's like a forced capture of, like, the townsfolk.
Yep.
He's a bad person. He's, and some of those people, like, their power levels are kind of scary. But most of the time, the tone is pretty upbeat and adventurous.
Did you catch who's the narrator?
No.
It's Ian McShane.
Oh, I did. I did notice it at the very beginning, and then I lost track of it. He's a good narrator for it. There's one or two things I wish we could talk about that Randy hasn't seen yet.
I haven't seen it. I got late, and I only see three episodes.
But I think you've seen enough that, that you've witnessed the strange phenomenon, which is like, it's kind of like there's no bad characters. So you've got, among the three leads, you've got Luffy, you've got Nami, Zoro, all fun characters.
Yep.
But there's also, in the mix, is a character named Kobe, who, you are, Randy, is like a kind of an eager young sailor who wants to join the Marines,
Marine,
I believe.
Because they want to
and is a little torn because Luffy has bonded with them a little bit.
But also because the Marines are kind of jerks.
The Marines are kind of jerks. A little bit of a...
Well, and then they're stuck on a pirate ship, like in the bowels of a pirate ship at the very beginning of... I forget that pirate's name.
Davina?
She was super fun,
she
too.
She was fun.
Last, yeah.
She liked to hit people with a giant
a little
club.
Bit of like if Matron Mama Morton from Chicago was a pirate queen.
That was the first pirate I saw, and she's firing like glittery cannonballs, and I'm like, oh, this is super
This is going to be insane. And But she also has this like giant steel mace that I think had like a heart shape or something somewhere in it, too. But you do see her brain one or two people in it. There's a little light swearing in this, which is fun. It kind of gives it a little bit more edge. But and then the bad guys are super fun too. So you've got you've probably seen the very sort of you saw the sort of very poncy git kind of guy, the long haired dude who shows up. He's one of those snide Marines,
the son of Axe Hand.
And then you've got Axe Hand himself, a big kind of get the job done hard. If he was a cop, he'd be like a hard ass, he's going to smack you up against the wall kind of guy.
I've seen Super Speed Guy, which I don't want to spoil where that guy comes from, but I've seen him. And then I know Usopp, who is in third episode, I believe will sort of join their crew and be part of the crew based on the post.
Another kind of weird vagabond.
Likes to tell stories.
A little bit like some of these, most of these characters are in a little bit of a way kind of a losers.
Yeah.
They're a little bit of a losers club of pirate adventurer people who clearly also have like hidden talents and backstories
but
to be revealed.
But in a weird way, it's also, this entire season is like getting the band together.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it's got that element while also doing, like, forwarding the story, but I know how we all like getting a team together, and it's kind of incorporating that.
It's a kind of whole season, Luffy is, in a weird way, is both a natural leader and also a doofus.
Yeah.
Yep.
He reminds me of Aang from Last Airbender.
Mm-hmm.
But Aang wasn't like quite like setting out to lead people early on, and Luffy is, and I will be excited to see where that goes. I've already seen some times when he like doesn't make some maybe great decisions.
Right.
This is kind of episodes 4, 5, 6. And anyway, but yeah, it proved very kind of addicting. Mm-hmm.
All the characters have really cool backstories that you're introduced to.
Yeah, and they pretty quickly start revealing them.
Yeah.
I don't think I don't think I know much about Nami's backstory yet, but they've given several hints.
Yep.
And maybe before the season is over, we will. Yeah, I'm excited to see more. Does anybody know how many long the season is?
10. It's only 8?
Yep, it's only 8.
Oh, 8.
Man.
And so I'm like already almost done.
Yep. Well, Dave, if you want more, there are 1,000 episodes.
Well, I will say Netflix has already greenlit a second season.
Yeah, and I said the writers have said basically they're ready to go as soon as the strike is over. They're like, yeah, they've already broken it down. They're like, we can get filming quickly.
Yeah.
So hopefully it will not be like a super long wait.
But next year at least.
Yeah. Yep. Similarly,
yep.
Let's talk about My Adventures with Superman.
Right. We've brought this animated series up before. It is anime influenced, mm-hmm. and so that's something we've talked about
before.
We're
the whole slowly time. Being dragged into anime. Next week it's going to be all JoJo all the time.
But you know what? It's funny. It's like, because these are all tangential to it.
Yes.
It's like an American cartoons inspired with anime influence, and yep. then a live action show based on an anime. It's not anime yet, Randy. We haven't broken.
Yes.
it's anime adjacent.
It's anime adjacent. But the first season has wrapped. Yep. What was it, 10 episodes?
10 episodes.
And there were some big reveals that happened before it happened. Like, already they were doing their own thing where the villains in it had, like, they were all linked. Mm-hmm. Anybody who watched Spectacular Spider-Man knows about how, like, when that was coming out, what was that, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Or more. That they kind of tied to Oscorp and stuff like that. A lot of the bad guys, so that they had sort of linked origins, and it wasn't just like, oh, there's just all these random supervillains suddenly. Well, that's kind of what the case is in Superman and My Adventures with Superman. For most of the season, Clark, Lois, and Jimmy, the three buddies, mm-hmm. have been interns at yep. the Daily Planet.
Yep.
But before the series is out, they get promoted.
The very end.
At the very end.
And I love the way they did it. The promotions are super fun.
It's so good. Steve Lombard, who is a D-bag, tries to scoop everybody else sports reporter,
yep.
who also kind of in his episode that showed the most of him, he was like a trolling basically Jimmy's account online where Jimmy is known. He has like a
Flamebird
like TikTok and other like social media account where he kind of does conspiracy theory, Bigfoot, UFO stuff.
Right.
And somebody was trolling him and he finds out it's Steve Lombard. And Steve Lombard still tries to buddy up with him and sort of talk about like people being lone wolves and, you know, you can't count on people. And indeed, at the time, he does make a little headway because it's one a thing where Lois and Clark had to kind of do other stuff and they couldn't hang with Jimmy.
Yeah.
And so he kind of gets in his head. But when Jimmy gets the promotion, Lombard anime hugs him, which is like under like one arm, like he's crushing him. He has like the anime tears down his eyes.
Yep.
And he gives him the a little plush lone wolf, and they overlay it with the sound all
great.
In the space of about 1 second, which is the kind of when they're doing visual humor, how they do it on the show sometimes. But there's also what else? Big
reveals about Krypton, and like they still haven't fully revealed it, but it seems like there's that, you know, he Clark still doesn't know like the deal about his dad.
Right.
He doesn't know. He thought his dad was like part of the invasion force. That's clearly not what's going on.
Right. It had this thing that looked like Invincible early on,
yeah.
where it's like just like father is the dad is the
kind of an invading,
you know, what would be like a warlord.
And he sent Clark as kind of like an envoy to...
Right. And there's still mystery around that. It has like a sort of big mystery going on. But it seems like Jor-El is not going to be probably just a straight warlord.
I kind of like that wrinkle that they don't speak the same language and they can't
yeah.
quite understand each other's motives.
Yeah, I'm sure that like at some point all the writers clearly know what Jor-El is saying when he's talking.
Yeah.
He's got emotion and you can tell he's...
Like frustrated.
He's frustrated and upset at times, but you just... cannot tell what he's saying. Part of why, like, to show you how weird this series can get, part of why Lois knows all that is her interdimensional journey in the
yeah.
episode with Mixes Pitalik, who is reimagined as more of like a kind of a, almost like an anime kind of
yokai
imp or kind yokai of. Demon who's like, you know, prankish at times but actually kind of dangerous. He's got like the pointed ears, and I think the prayer beads that make him look like some Dragon Ball Z character, yeah. To be honest.
And then there's the League of Lois.
Yes, there's like multiple Loises from throughout time. Almost the sense that she, in her way, might actually be a bigger thing than Superman. You know, yes. Like yeah. Loises from throughout the universe.
It was a really cool idea that I don't think we've ever seen.
But it also like it hits this animated universe's Lois. In the sense she's like, oh, some of these Loises were doing things, like, much younger than I was, and they're already, like, somehow really powerful, and they'd meet in this interdimensional intersection or this spaceship kind of thing. And she's like, what am I? I haven't done anything yet. So she gets the imposter syndrome.
Yep. She also gets a little recorder device that shows a Clark who has gone evil.
Right. It looks like Invading Force Superman.
I really like what they did with her and her dad at Thanksgiving. So, yes. Like, the general shows up, Clark knows who it is, she doesn't know that's who it is.
Yep.
And, like, Martha Kent's reaction to her, she's like, I don't like that man.
Yeah, yeah, she, at a certain point, at first she's like, we're going to have a good Thanksgiving, yep, everybody yep. behave,
yep.
You know, Clark, don't you snap at this man, you got to show him respect, right. Even though the general is being extremely rude and doing the sort of, what are you going to do with your life kind of stuff and all that stuff.
And also the general's like, have you always worn glasses? You look very familiar.
Right. There's a hint that he's going to figure it out.
Yeah.
Well, he's not a dumb man.
But Martha, at one point, when she's in another room, is like, I'm going to throw hands at this man or something like that. She's like, he is being mean to my son, and it is not going
to
last.
Ma and Pa Kent are great.
Yeah.
Pa Kent, like, wanting to perfect the turkey. He's like, I will cook it. I will amazing. And he screws up. He's like, Clark, just cook it.
Yeah. I had one or two friends who thought he was like Pa Kent was a little too goofy and not this solid oak of morality. But I'm like, I actually really like the kind of anime humor that they mm-hmm. do in this. And I feel like when they want to, they're going to have him be that person. And they've shown glimpses of it. So I'm perfectly fine with him being a bit goofy at Thanksgiving. Yeah, he was goofy dad.
Yep.
And I like the exploration of Clark's powers. I think it was like a couple episodes where he got a super hearing.
Yeah, they're slowly rolling it all out.
And him sort of like running himself ragged to sort of
he does find the sort everything. Of thing like what's his name in Astro City, Samaritan, which is he tries to like when you can hear all the crimes and stuff, he's like I have to stop all the crimes.
Or
and he's like drinking all this coffee to stay awake and stuff. And Jimmy's like, you slept in a while, bro? By the way, Jimmy is a great character.
Yeah.
Jimmy's delightful. Lois is great. I think one of the things we all liked is that Lois likes Clark for Clark. And that does all come to a big conclusion, or like, well, they start dating before the series, before this first season.
Yeah,
ends.
there's no secret.
He uses the L word.
Yes, he does.
I noticed that.
Yeah,
they have some big old kisses.
Yep.
He's down there, boy.
Well, and then I mean that's the big story, but then we also have the teaser of like what's going on with the Kryptonians.
Yep.
And what's obviously Brainiac and Zod. Together somehow.
Yep, and we've seen Deathstroke in there. They utilize a lot of the expanded DC universe outside of just Superman lore.
We have a much more vicious Amanda Waller.
Yep.
Yep. Amanda seems like she may be more so than General Lane, Lois's dad, who at least occasionally will show these moments where she's like, oh, he's like, now I'm not so sure about something. And Waller's like, I'm sure enough.
Yeah, it's like he doesn't want to risk like human life. Where Amanda's like, end justifies the means.
100%.
Yeah.
And so I think that this is one of those things where in the end that he will be could be brought over to Superman's side, but it's going to be like extremely difficult to do. And there is like some big like action in it. Like Superman fights some big old giant robots pretty regularly in this show.
Yep.
But also people with powers that seem to be like born out of this Kryptonian tech and stuff like that. That's the whole big mystery and conspiracy still going. So you'll see like there's a crazy version of Parasite.
Yeah,
it like turned. It essentially is like a almost like an organic suit, a protection suit. But it like in response to like the harder you hit it, the more it changes, and it begins to like form like these. Like almost like a xenomorph, like type, like different appendages will come out. It's very creepy anime.
Full kaiju,
and in the end, it is as big as a kaiju. And so you get to see Superman fighting this giant thing, if near to the series finale.
We'll see what happens because everybody's on strike.
Yeah.
When we get a season 2, I hope we get more.
Well, the creators of Outright said that they have multiple seasons already, thought of and
it
stuff.
It is definitely. It's the series I didn't know I wanted because I think if you asked me what I wanted, I would have still gone much more traditional. And, you know, if I have a criticism, I can't remember if we talked about this before, maybe off, at least off mic at times, I kind of miss the I'm going to take over Metropolis type bad guys.
Yeah.
Everybody in this, their story kind of fits into a broader conspiracy of some sort of, you know, the Kryptonian technology loose in Metropolis. But that wields its own pleasures, and it's like I don't know where that story's going to go.
Yeah.
And it's exciting to be watching Superman and not knowing where it's going to go,
while still capturing the core of what makes Superman unique.
Yeah, for sure.
I love that they do that in a different way, but they don't stray from those ideals.
Yeah. Clark is still, like, the key thing is that he's fundamentally decent. I'm happy to say that they have not done any episodes like the comics sometimes do that talks about how the world needs a Superman or how his decency is the most important power he has. I'm like, let that be understood within the story, but tell stories.
Right.
Don't let him be the story.
Yeah. Correct. No, it's great. I thought the finale was fantastic.
And yeah, I would say, you know, give it a little bit more time, but it has the potential to be essentially a match, I would say, for Superman the Animated Series as far as, like, best iterations of him.
I agree.
I'm like, there's nothing else I can think of that's up there as far as, like, an extended version. And so as long as they don't drop the ball, they've got that within their sights.
Yeah. All right, I think that'll do it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.